You're listening to Higher Ed Social, episode 54. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Logan. And I just wanted to apologize because I feel like it's my fault, but this week's episode is late. Not just late as in today's Thursday, but it's also late in that we didn't have a show last week. Things have been super crazy for Jackie and I and just hadn't had a chance to edit this episode. But we think you'll love this episode because it stars Chris Barrows, the social media and mobile product administrator at NYU. Chris is a leader of social media managers called the Social Media Ambassadors, and we talk about them, and we talk about creating an effective social media team that's made up of students, staff, or even both. Chris is especially challenged because he has a very large campus. I mean, NYU, it's huge, and it's global. So he works really hard with tools like Slack and Skype to shrink the distance between users.
Yeah, so speaking of being awesome, Chris is not only busy at NYU connecting a bunch of different people across the globe, but he's currently serving as the chair of the upcoming EduWeb conference. So we talk a lot about conferences, the benefit of going, and then also the presentation process. A lot of people, especially in higher education, will put forth a presentation proposal and maybe not get selected. So we talk about Chris's experience with really seeing a lot of great proposals and having to narrow it down for the sake of his conference. Chris also hosts his own podcast, which of course we talk about, called Why I Social. And he's had some great names on his show. And we talked to him about how he gets his guests and what his process is, and really the power of just simply asking for something that you want. So we hope that you enjoy this episode of Higher Ed Social.
Well, I hit record and then the internet died and then my mouse died and then I just hit record again. That's why I had to pull out my little mini thing and then take apart my quadcopter remote control and then put the batteries into my mouse. Because oddly enough, I'm out of batteries, which sucks.
Really sad.
It is very sad. So,
well, now we're recording. So, welcome to the show, Chris. After all those technical difficulties.
Happy to be here, of course. You guys know that.
Yay. I'm so excited. Well, Chris is a returning guest, one of very few returning guests that we've had to the show. So, that's a big deal.
Well, Chris gets his own show because he shared it with Lisa.
Right, that is true.
For our High Ed Web recap. And we never really got to talk to Chris about his actual job. So. And what he does, and Chris does a whole lot of awesome. If you may remember from those old days, he's the host of the Why I Social podcast.
Not letting Chris introduce himself.
Really and sad. I wanted to plug his podcast as we just had that.
Of course, we were going to plug his podcast.
Well, he'll get to plug it again too. So go ahead, Chris. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I appreciate the plug. Certainly appreciate podcasts. Is certainly, I mean, actually, truthfully, podcast is a big part of what I do outside of NYU, where I'm at. It is a huge part. It actually has a big impact on my life, and it does actually help me pay my bills. So, quite frankly, it is important. But in terms of, you know, higher ed and everything there, you know, I've been now at NYU. I'm in my fourth year at NYU. I've been in higher ed 8+ years. And I'm doing social media. I think what's really interesting is when I started at NYU, my social media focus was trying to get our social started up and getting going again. Because NYU's social media, and I've said this multiple times, this is no secret, but when I started there centrally, it was just basically completely lacking. So basically, I had to play this role of kind of architect and kind of build it back up. It was a lot of fun. It was a big challenge. But the focus in the past few years has been more so not our central account, but the greater university,
right?
Which has been a lot of fun. And the biggest thing and the thing I'm most proud of that I get to work on all the time is just as an example, working with 200+ people in our social media ambassadors group that I get to run, which is, you know, constantly evolving and growing. But you know, at the time when it started, I didn't see a ton of these out there in higher ed. So for me, it's still the thing that I think when I think of my job that I that I enjoy talking about most, probably. But obviously, you know, my job is to consult, train, coach. I do training sessions. I run the Social Media Ambassadors, as I said. And the other thing is I do mobile. I mean, mobile is part of my job. So like everybody else out there, unfortunately, at least most of us, unfortunately, I don't get to do it 100% of the time. Do I wish 100% of my job was social? Yes. But even my work knows that. Social is where my passion, social community and digital marketing as a whole is where the passion lies.
Right. You and I are very similar in a lot of ways. I do mobile. I do video. I do social. I do many things. Wear the hats. Jack of all trades. That seems to be the thing we do.
It's the common trend in higher ed that concerns me, because higher ed needs to start thinking more like being its own digital agency. I mean, Bentley University is doing that. That's a motion they've kind of made towards. I mean, I flat out, you know, I had inquired about, you know, when that job was out there. I know I certainly was interested, and that was the reason, because there was an agency component to it. And I think if universities don't adapt, we're going to be in trouble, because we can't focus on one thing and we can't focus in one area. Social needs to talk to to advertising, who needs to talk to public affairs. We all need to be in the same loop, and to separate us all is just, it's a big mistake.
Well, I've been lucky in the last year or two, actually. We've brought all those components together. I mean, we already had marketing, communications, admissions, athletics, student affairs, alumni, and even students, like all in the same room as part of our larger social media team, or our smaller social media team. We have a larger social media team that includes all departments. That would be akin to your ambassadors. But this year we focused even more on bringing kind of the marketing social media component and the communications social media component together, making sure that we have, you know, weekly meetings. We already talk every day, but it helps so much when, you know, social is in the room, like web is in the room, the news folks are in the room, and we're all talking about the content that will be going across all platforms, not just social, during the week. So that gives us ideas that just makes it so much better. We call it Now and Next, where we talk about, you know, what's happening this week and what's happening in the coming weeks. So,
how snappy. That's a fun little...
I know, isn't it awesome?
So cute.
I can't take any credit for it, but it definitely helped me, because I was already creating weekly content plans so that I didn't step on the feet of other folks and they didn't step on my feet. So having us all like come together seems like the most duh thing that we could have done, but it's not always as duh as you think it is.
Yeah, and it's challenging. I mean, I will just say, like, in even a, and this is very much in a startup phase, I guess that's the best way to put it. The fact is, we have a Slack group now for our social media ambassadors group, and the design there is to get them talking on a more daily basis, because we're across campus.
Right.
And campus is a global campus because we're all over the world. So, it's this focus on getting the people in the room and talking to one another, even if that room is an online Slack group. But, you know, you add things like a Skype integration and other things. Suddenly we're all in one space.
Yeah, we use Slack for the Boulevard team, which is our student street team. And the larger, like, social, the smaller, sorry, I keep saying the larger. There's, like, the Boulevard team, and then there's the social media team, and then there's, like, the social media partners. But the social media team is really the ones that are in the Slack with the Boulevard team, and they all kind of talk together in a gobbledygook.
We're like adjusting. I was thinking about our social media strategy at Skidmore, and because my position, well, there's a lot of reorganization at Skidmore, which was the creation, one of the which is the creation of my position, which means that now there's two people that are focused on social media instead of one, which I know feels like kind of tiny, but
no, that seems like amazing.
Like, it's pretty cool to have someone that, you know, you can bounce ideas off of directly. Is that's like, she's my supervisor, but we both have kind of the same priorities. Whereas if you have like a director of marketing or something like that, like yes, social is a piece of that, but they have other priorities as well. So it's a little bit different to have a supervisor whose priorities really line up exactly with yours versus just a small overlap. Not that that's a bad thing, but it's been really cool to just push the limits a little bit. And we're just kind of like, I don't know, diving in to new things a little bit. We just got the Facebook video or Facebook Live. Is that what they're calling it?
Yes.
The live video thing. We just got that. So now it's like, what do we do with this? Like, now I have this new tool.
It's a good question.
So, I mean, it eliminates us from going on Periscope, which I'm really excited about because I don't like to have more channels.
That was the really cool thing that I saw. I certainly have talked about that with our team. And I should say, when I define team, so to clarify, there's four people. We are not the equivalent of four people in the work that happens. We are the equivalent of two people when you actually break down all the jobs that get done and where people are focused. And so it's an important thing to, because I talked to some people like, oh yeah, I didn't want you. You've got this huge team. I'm like, no, we don't. Some people often, I think of some of the other groups on campus where there might be a large student group, but who's doing, you know, there. So I make it really clear. Essentially, we do not have a huge team, four people that are equivalent of two. That's the best way to describe it. But I think it's interesting. We saw the Facebook, you know, we were talking about the live streaming and the Facebook Live was happening. I was like, and I was excited about that because it was a great place to deliver. I am not convinced that, you know, that the generations and the students we're trying to look at are jumping all over Periscope either.
Nope.
And because of that and data showing that to me, Facebook Live, even though Facebook may not be the place either anymore, though they are going there for groups, which means they're initially coming onto there. So you can tell them about Facebook Live. So there's a great opportunity there. And again, Facebook, if you look at the numbers on them, they're winning the internet in so many different ways. I mean, it's Facebook and Google and YouTube. I mean, that's that is the free content sources for the internet at this point. Nothing better real time than Twitter, as far as I'm concerned. But students are using that as a news source. So again, it's a perspective component here where we have to look at what are they doing with the platforms. And to me, Facebook Live has a good potential. It's untapped for the most part in higher ed, but
I think it's untapped in general.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
Do you remember the last time you saw a Facebook live stream? Because I do, and it was something that I knew was going to happen because it was someone testing it for Facebook.
I unfortunately have seen a lot of Facebook live streams.
Unfortunately?
I haven't seen any. Well, I have yet to see one.
I say this because I have a very active involvement in the overall social media space. So that's the agency world, et cetera.
That's true.
And with that, I've seen a lot of them, and a lot of them are talking heads. And I have burned a few bridges, unfortunately, in the process with this. Not intentionally, but I guess it's what happens when people.
Are you saying you offended someone on the internet?
Yeah, believe it or not, I was told
you're the only one.
Yeah, apparently. But no, I see a lot of talking heads, and I said, like, can you not be a talking head? Can you do something different with this? And they're like, well, what do you mean talking head? So I didn't mean to offend anyone when I said it, but it was.
Can you do what you did, but way differently?
Yeah, I mean, it was better. Time and time again, it was like there was nothing different to it, but there was more providing value, and there's multiple people. So I think there's a lot of people doing that.
Right.
I'm polite about it. Let me be clear. Whenever I do, I have said this on a blab the other day that someone had me on, and I flat out think that people can't take criticism right now.
Nope.
In this day and age, especially social media professionals, which is really sad. So I just tell people, learn to take criticism. I speak back to the first 4 years of my career versus the last four. First four of my years, completely stagnant, no career growth. No one knew who the hell I was in higher ed. And the reason that was because I couldn't take criticism, so I never gave myself a chance to grow.
Right.
The last 4 years, completely different, learned to take criticism, and that actually allowed a boss to trust me more because when he did give me criticism, I took it and I ran with it, you know, and I improved. So internet, learn to take criticism, especially if you're a social media professional. That's the thing that I've been trying to say to people who I feel, you know, need to hear it. And some have listened. Some have listened, believe it or not. So,
well, taking criticism is a big thing. I've definitely understood that. Say,
I think that's applicable in more than just social media.
But yeah, it has a lot of power because social media gurus tend to be full of themselves, which is, I know I can be full of myself sometimes. I'm not going to lie.
Growing. You're growing. I just watched Logan grow. That was so nice.
I've always known that I'm full
of
myself.
Thank you for helping with that process, Chris. I appreciate it.
I'm happy to help. Always happy.
Maybe we'll have Chris on the show more often. Maybe like every third week we'll have Chris on the show.
Actually, Logan,
Chris and I are going to keep hosting the Higher Ed Social Podcast, and then you can be a guest sometimes.
Oh, really?
Surprise.
Oh, well, good thing I pay for hosting.
That is true. Logan actually bears most of the financial burden of the show.
No, Jackie sends all the thank you letters, so she gets it equals
out. We do
out.
Have some exclusive swag for our listeners or for our guests. But
that's
then also
important. That is important, though. The thank you is so essential. I was reading earlier today. I forget where I was even reading this. If I can find the link, I'll share it. But it was talking about how, you know, we've evolved from this where the letter used to be really special, and then now the email response, even to some extent, became special when you actually respond with more than one sentence. You know,
I know, right?
But so now the letter, the handwritten letter, like when I get one of those, I'm like, holy cow. But I have like 20 of them hanging up at work from companies and people, you know, and actually like recently I had a family member pass and I have the sympathy card hanging up because they took the time. My office took the time to make a card. So I think it's amazing the power of a word thank you, but in how you deliver it. So I think, you know, that's just what comes to mind when I hear the word thank you, though. I mean, I think it's just, that's not necessarily a higher ed thing, but I think it's just an important thing across the board.
I'm like a pack rat when it comes to thank you notes, like, because it's like, I don't know, like, I keep them because it's like, it's not only like, oh, that was really nice, like, that they took the time to, like, thank me for something that I did, but it also reminds me of, like, that thing that I did. So, or like, I got a thank you note because I had a Skype call with a communication class from my alma mater, and I just talked about like my life after graduation. Like, how easy is that? I just had to like log onto Skype and like say hi and then talk about myself. But they, not only did my professor write me a thank you note, but each of the students wrote like a little sentence about like, gee, like, thank you so much, Jackie, like, for saying like these things, or like, it really made me feel better. And he compiled them into like a Word document and sent them to me. Like, how nice. And so I just have that forever because I don't want to get rid of it.
Well, showing gratitude is important, I think. And receiving it definitely makes what you did feel worth it, you know?
And it plays a part in higher ed in a really big way, I think, because when you talk about trying to get buy-in from higher ups, you know, it plays a huge part in helping That's with that true. Process.
Right.
The other thing I can say is you doing it gets it. It's this little thing of a positive reinforcement of your work. It's a minor thing, maybe, but it goes it makes it so that people leave with a positive interpretation of you. Interpretation might not be the right word, but it leaves them
positive sentiment.
Yeah, positive sentiment. So the fact is, because interpretation makes it sound like you're not really that way, and that's certainly not what I mean.
But you might not be.
In some cases, I think that's definitely the case, unfortunately, but not in this chat. I'm just saying as a
whole. No.
But I think that goes a long way. And I mean, I will tell you, just as you know, as someone who's, you know, chair of a conference, the thank you component is going to be huge for me. I've said thank you a few times. I said thank you like three times in the past week just to people who proposed, because I can't pick everybody's presentation in the end when we get to releasing the schedule. And I'm grateful that people, you know, I'm grateful that we had over 100 people, you know, submit presentations. You know,
let's rewind a little bit. Because we want to talk a little bit about what you're talking about. Because we haven't mentioned the conference you're talking about, which is a pretty well-known conference, EDU Web.
Yes. Yeah, I took the chair role last year. I'd been attending the conference for some time, but I took the chair role at the end of last year's conference. And it's a big challenge. I mean, one, it's a conference that I think, it's known, but it has not had the growth that I would have expected personally. And I wanted to see growth. So I got involved, the past 2 years as a member of the team, just kind of advisory board, not a major impact, but enough to impact it where I could, give suggestions, thoughts, et cetera. When I got asked to be chair, it was huge, and I took the opportunity. I jumped at it. It was going to be a big challenge, and I knew that, and it's been a challenge in a lot of ways, but it's been one I've been grateful for because, we went back. The first thing we did was we went back and looked at 3 years of 3 years of surveys.
Right.
And pulled out all that information. If I had the list in front of me of how many changes I actually proposed, it was a pretty long list. A lot of them really minor. One of them was very simple, and it's just the making sure that since we're taking Twitter handles information in, let's make sure we aptly give people a chance to engage on Twitter.
Right.
So making sure it's prominently displayed on the tags. That seems like a small deal, but it's a big deal because if you think about it, a higher ed conference, people who even are never on Twitter will start to engage on Twitter.
Right. So, that's a gateway drug for a lot of people.
Yeah. So
that, hey, it was mine. That's how I learned about Twitter back in 2008.
Right. But, it's breaking that down. And the hard part right now, I'll tell you right now, is we are going through and we're looking at proposals and, we've got people looking that we've got most of the track chairs lined up and that, to have them looking. But we're looking, as myself and my co-chair, Joel Renner, and we're looking at these. And, man, it hurts that some of these people are not going to get to present. And I obviously can't reveal schedule or anything, but it will be out soon enough. But some of these people, the good majority of these things, I would have loved to see. And so it's tough. And I don't know if people, this is a message I said on Snapchat today on my personal Snapchat. I said, if you've ever been rejected from a conference, don't hold it against the conference. You may feel like you had this awesome presentation. It doesn't mean you didn't. It just means that you weren't the right fit this time. So keep going along. If you've got that proposal, send it to someone else. Don't take it back out on the conference because I think that we get so wrapped up in, why wasn't I accepted? Why wasn't it good enough? And they see something. Well, you don't know what the proposals look like. You don't know how they outlined it. And it's true that some proposals may not deliver as well as they look written down, but keep in mind what people have to go off of. So it's a challenge and it's just something I let people know because there's a lot of good conferences out there. I'm not in this to be competitive. I just wanted to run a conference and work with a conference because I wanted a chance to make a difference in higher ed. That's the reason I took this role. I wasn't trying to, be better than this or that, and I don't think any of the conferences in our space, that's the reason I like the higher ed conference space, is none of them are trying to be necessarily better than someone else. They're just trying to provide a really good education
right.
for professionals in the space.
I mean, that's the whole point. That's why we go to conferences. And people have to understand, your particular proposal, like you said, it may work at one conference, but may not work at another. Or, you can't speak at both conferences because sometimes you have a lot of overlap. So, or someone spoke about it this year, or someone is already speaking about it this year, or someone spoke about it last year. You have to keep all of those kinds of things in mind. If you can, go for a poster presentation. If the place does that, do that. I know some conferences do. It gives you a chance to talk about it and all those kinds of things. So, sometimes, there's just a limited number of spots and there's a limited number of tracks and there's like 200 people trying for the same spot. So you just have to remember that.
Yeah, it's true. And you have to keep in mind that every conference is different. What the rules are, is there something like if someone is a sponsor, does that mean that like they have is there a few spots that might be guaranteed where they're working with them to get the best one?
Right.
I think every conference is completely different and you have to keep in mind that's, I compare it to the fact that the conference space, you're going to have a chance to present it somewhere. If it's a good presentation, it's going to eventually fit the bill.
Right.
But also people don't want to see the same thing over and over again. So if you've proposed the same thing to six different conferences, well, there's going to be crossover. And if you start to, you might see less and less as you go along. There's a reason for that.
Right.
My actual rule of thumb as a presenter, because I presented at a lot of conferences, is I try to diversify it, change it up. I might propose the same for one or two conferences, but I also will keep in mind that I may not have as much at the second because I might have seen a lot of those people at the first. So
right.
It's being mindful of that.
It is. I also want to talk a little bit about your podcast.
Sure.
if that's okay.
Yeah.
We're plugging it.
Because we didn't get a lot of chance to talk about it last time around. I'm kind of curious. You've had some pretty famous folks on there. Scott Stratton.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do that? How did you get him to do that? I've met him like twice. I think he actually remembers me as the guy who always asks him if he wants to, if he'll get a beer with me.
Sure, nothing like Logan.
I know, but he recognized me when he came to Nashville, I think.
You know, Scott.
But he saw me like 2 weeks before at Hyde Web, so there's that.
Well, you know, Scott and Allison are lovely. They when they were at Hyatt Web, I had forgot the book. So you know how we got the book?
Yeah.
I forgot the book in the room. Okay. So I was like, crap, what am I going to do? So I had, my laptop, I'm looking around like it's here, but it's the other laptop. Oh no, here it is. I had the, whatever the new sticker was, I'm not the Jackass Whisperer sticker. Okay.
Yes.
So I had that sticker and I'm like, will you sign my sticker? I mean, I didn't know what else to get him to sign, but I needed an excuse to talk to him.
Right.
That was step one. And his signature totally rubbed off within like 3 weeks, by the way. I mean, it didn't stick. But, you know, I asked him up to sign it and I said, you know what? I got a podcast. I gave them, now keep in mind, I have like a 1 to 2 sentence pitch that's there.
Right.
For those purposes. I said, hey, here's the pitch. You know, would you be interested in coming on? You know, and said, yeah, you know, here, give us an email. And here's the thing. This is what I love about him. And I'm not knocking other folks who've been on my show who don't do this. I mean, because someone like Guy Kawasaki, who's been on the show, has an assistant, you know, who helps.
Right.
But Scott just basically was like, yeah, just send us an email. We got a person. But even though he had someone helping, it basically was him communicating back to me.
Right.
You know, and he was very hands-on with it. They came on. They took the time for it. And they were very intentional. And I was just grateful. And Scott in particular was just a great guest. And he drops a lot of knowledge bombs in that episode. In particular, and the thing that stands out to me of what he talked about was he talked about focus.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in this age where so many people are, they got FOMO. You know, they got this fear of missing out. They want to get on every shiny new thing. And I can't stand it. It drives me up a wall.
Yep.
I'm a very, you know, I'm all about focus.
Yep.
And when he said, I'm like, okay, you just illustrated everything that I said is wrong with the space. And it was really funny, though, I will say, because when he was on the when he was doing his presentation at that same conference, I don't know if you were in the room. Do you remember why I like was slinking in my seat halfway through his presentation?
No, I remember the presentation. I remember he screamed so loud. He almost lost his voice. He made that a point the last time I talked. I was like, I almost lost my voice after you guys.
Well, he
went on a huge rant about millennials.
Yeah, he makes a reference to an incident that involved, like, I think it was the University of New Mexico. And
right.
It was a visiting professor, but the visiting professor also had, like, been at NYU. So it was, like, really funny because I'm slinking in my seat because I know the exact scenario. I did the social listening on this thing.
Right.
And then I watched anyone who knew me in the room turn and look at me, and I'm like, yeah, I'm here. Okay. Like, I'm like, I know about this. I don't want to hear about it again. But it was funny because I told him about it afterwards. Like, he's like, well, I'm not apologizing. I'm like, I'm not asking you to apologize. You were, that guy was a jerk.
But you could be on my show.
Yeah, but we threw him a towel. I'm like, and then I'm like, but that guy was a visiting professor, by the way. So he wasn't even like.
Actually associated.
Like, yeah, like let's just disassociate there. But it was just one of those funny things. I was like, oh, man. But no, he was really easygoing. And I think here's the thing. You want to have someone on a show. You want to do something. If you don't ask, you'll never know.
Yep.
And that's the biggest
lesson I tell people all the time.
Yeah.
About a lot of things.
Well, that's the problem. Most people will not ask. They'll say, well, you know, how did you get someone to do something? I asked. That's usually the answer. That is usually the answer. I asked. And if you go up and you're confident, you've got the right medium for them. Yeah, they'll probably say yes. Or if they say no, they'll at least, you know, it is what it is. But you can't, again, I go back to the taking criticism. You can't take it personal.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, don't take those kind of things personal.
Well, so I don't think anyone's ever told us no.
No, not that I know of.
Not that I know of. So,
but Chris, you said you had a pitch of like for the show that you asked Scott. So what is your pitch so that our listeners know a little bit about what your show's about?
Well, my pitch basically is my show is candid conversations with everyone from average Joe to CEO. And it's basically trying to learn about the person behind the handle. So it's not focused on, you know, all the details and nitty gritty. It's just getting to know you. And I think that was very fresh for a lot of people because so many people get on and they therefore focused on, you know, well, you wrote this book. In this book, you said X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean? Very much right. Like this is a conversation. But the idea of candid conversations are just about the person. Now, I will say since the show launched just last week, I launched a new show / sub show, whatever you want to call it, called Why Social Sessions. And that is topic focused. So our first topic was Twitter 10K. And that's topic based. We're not talking about individuals. We're talking about a topic. And that's a little bit different because I did want to get to that. But it, you know, the show Why I Social is why do I social? And that is now the question that gets asked at the end of every episode, because I went a full year and never asked that question. I realized. And so I now ask that question at the end of every episode. You know,
that's a really good move, I think.
Yeah.
But can we talk Twitter 10K?
You know, the Twitter 10K conversation that we had was more so around the misconceptions. Can I just say that there's a lot of people in social, I imagine in higher ed social too, who seem to think it's going to be, and I'm not saying it's all pros by any means, please, but they seem to think suddenly 10,000 characters are showing up in our feed. But the focus is still 140 characters. The focus that what you see first is initially 140 characters, and then it breaks down into potentially more details. So
there are worse things to me, to be honest. I think there are worse things that Twitter could do than give us more characters.
Yeah.
And well, right. I mean, I'm not saying like Twitter fix it or do something different, but I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Well Twitter has issues. Twitter has a lot of issues.
Well, that's what we speak to. And I think that's the biggest thing. If you listen to the episode, I'm not saying it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But at the same time, I'm not against it. And as a marketer, and I think in that way, there's a lot of really cool storytelling opportunities to happen. Because we could say, here's this really cool thing that blah, 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 140 characters. And then if they click, that additional information can be there with the full link. And not a bit.ly link, so you're not. There's less safety issues. So there's a lot of positives to it that people aren't speaking. They're immediately jumping on it. But the biggest problem was the misconception that suddenly, oh my God, there's going to be 10,000 characters in my feed. I'm only going to see one thing when I go. You know what I mean? And and the other thing is there was a lot of people who do Twitter chats who were saying it's going to change Twitter chats. They're going to stink now. I'm like, no, they're still going to use only 140 characters because it's a Twitter chat. Like they're not going to drop. I don't think you're going to see people dropping 10,000, like that's right. And if you've seen what 10,000 characters looks like, no one's going to use 10,000 characters.
Right. Well, so 10,000 characters, I mean, Facebook's 5,000 and no one ever uses that.
Precisely.
I think the thing that scares me most were the rumors of the algorithm based newsfeed. That scared me far more than 10,000 characters.
Yes. But they quickly fixed the concerns on that.
Yes, they did.
And that was, and we discussed that briefly as well, for what it's worth on that. But
Twitter's going through a transition because they are literally the only social network that's not growing at the pace of others. Now, Facebook, it's not growing because everyone's on it.
it's running out of the ability to grow. Is their problem?
They've reached market saturation just slightly, but Twitter's not even close.
Twitter was completely stagnant last quarter,
and Instagram just came and passed them right by. And so has has Snapchat passed them yet?
I don't know if they have, but if they haven't, they're going to.
Yep.
There's no question. I think the thing with Twitter is it's still the best real time feed of anything. Now Snapchat could in some way or form surpass that in the future, perhaps, but I don't think it would be in the same way at this point, because I think there's still value to the words and images being there and not being a video or a message. But I love Snapchat, so I think Snapchat is spectacular and I'm gonna keep loving it. But I think Twitter, and if you look at how students are using Twitter, and because it's higher ed podcast, I will just make it really clear. Students, and every student I talk to says they're using it to get news. So they are looking at it.
Yep.
But their retweet does not mean as much because they're more likely to hit like than they are retweet.
Yep.
Because that's the thing you have to look at. And so I guess the future of Twitter that you have to question is how are they going to change that? And I don't know how they can change that.
Once they introduced the like, they definitely lower the value of the retweet because people aren't going to click two things. They want to click one.
Right.
Now, if they could add a button that's like and retweet, and maybe that would be enough to get people to do something. But, I mean, some of the things that they've added in the last few years, last few months to year, have been really helpful. I think the quote retweet was kind of awesome.
I really like that upgrade.
I think polls are pretty cool too.
I have a thing about polls though.
I was told that no one would engage with our polls, and I did a poll on Super Bowl Sunday, and we had 200 folks reply to it, which, you know, when you look at like retweets and likes put together, it doesn't, like, we haven't had many posts that have had an engagement of 200 some odd people. Yeah. I mean, that's nuts for, you know, a mid-sized university like Belmont. That's a lot for one tweet. So I actually think that there's, as far as engagement goes, I think there's some strength in that.
You can't see who voted for what.
Well,
there's places where I would want that.
You don't like being able to have anonymous secret ballots?
I mean, it's not a secret ballot. Well, I guess it is if I can't see who voted.
Yes, that's what a secret ballot is.
Can I have that option?
That would be interesting. And I think the one thing I do like about the polls, and I will say this, is that the polls for those, when you speak to the student audience in particular, I'm more so speaking to the undergraduates because I think graduate students are still in that range where they actually do this thing called conversation on Twitter, which it's remarkably good at, by the way. I have nearly 10,000 followers at this point, and I literally only know that because my screen is up, and I try to engage with as many people as possible. I'm not one of those follower counters. I actually hate followers. I wish they would get rid of the count. Like, I don't need to know or see that, and I don't want to see how many followers someone has. I think it's a useless metric. But what I find interesting is that I can put a poll up probably for university students and it's a quick action. So it's not so much the retweet, but it's more comparable to the like, and they're still expressing their opinion. So I think that's why you get that engagement, because it still works as a simple action.
Yep.
And as we get to and I don't like to group. I was just talking with my co-chair about this, and he agrees with me. I don't like this grouping of let's try to define this is what a millennial is or this is what a Gen Z is. I think of them all like you have different students than we have at NYU. You know,
right?
I don't think we can define the NYU student is not the Belmont student. You know what I mean? It's just they're very different students. So
right.
to define them and group them is just ridiculous to me. There might be things or trends that happen to exist, but let's just look at the actual facts. What are our individual students doing? And that's why the individual polling is useful. I think it goes beyond Twitter polling, though, obviously, in that case. But there's certainly value there.
I do think that we are starting to see a transition, though, in the general trends of how students do things. I've started to notice it over the last year or two. And just the trend is the movement away from broadcast social to more personal social, like Snapchat or Facebook Messenger, or, you know, we're back to instant messaging, which I think is kind of a full circle-y kind of thing. Because that's, you know, I remember back in, you know, 2000 logging on to Yahoo Pager and AOL Instant Messenger and seeing when my friends were online and sending them random messages. And now that's like, you know, that seems to be back. You're not going on Facebook as much. You're talking to people more person to person, which I actually think is a good thing. But at the same time, you know, it makes for challenges when it comes to marketing to these folks using these things.
Yeah, no, I do. But I think there's a great way to utilize things like Snapchat. Like I was speaking to a few people about this, the fact that they like to share in there, so they'll still share content with you. So if you can utilize it for user generated content. So
right. There's
a lot of great opportunities there. Even if you don't have the resources, you could still use it to get that user generated content. Right. And that is then going to accelerate, or, you know, it's going to really elevate, I should say, the content on your other platform. So you take this, you can put it on YouTube, you can put it on a Facebook, etc. And you can say, here's this, some of the great stuff from Snapchat. And then you can also do a snap that says, you know, find some of our really great stuff. So you're moving them around to spaces, you know, they are, but they're going to go because they know it's their stuff and they want to see their stuff in these places. Like they enjoy that. They like that you're promoting them, you know? So that's where I've seen a lot of wins and I see an opportunity for a win, but the personalization is huge. I mean, I think we're even seeing more and more with, I forget who it was too, but some school did like personalized web pages for like every student, you know?
That's, I've seen even go as cool as like GIFs, like personalized GIFs for each, for specific students, which is kind of cool. Though it seems like a lot of work, but hey, I mean, in our particular space, you know, differentiation is key. Showing how much you care.
Yeah. And it's hard to differentiate in this space at this point. I mean, so many things are just, expanding on ideas from other people. I mean, I often speak to, like, when we did first, like when we did a, and then we did this at NYU in 2013, we did a congrat at NYU. We had tweets up on the screen. We were for congratulations, thank yous, etc. Not many schools, I don't know what schools were doing at that time or who had done it in 2013. I won't sit here and claim to be the first because I honestly couldn't say that we were, but I just know it wasn't a thing. But now when you go, this is not a unique thing anymore. You know, so while it was relatively unique at that time, this is not unique now. You know, so people pick up what you do and they're going to evolve it and they're going to try and do it better or do it the exact same even, you know, just with their own unique twist for their institution. So to be and stand out is extremely difficult. And I argue more so than a lot of other professional spaces.
Yeah. Well, because you're always, I feel like I'm constantly behind. Like I watch so many schools do so many amazing and creative things that are engaging and like creative. Like we just had a campaign recently. We called it Show Your Love, where alumni and current students and friends and family, I guess, of Skidmore could give a gift to Skidmore, which allowed them to deliver virtual Valentines that were like Skidmore themed through email. And we were like so excited about this because it was not something we'd ever seen. And we put a lot of work into it. And then, you know, lo and behold, we see that another school had done a very similar thing, in that space. And it's like, oh, like,
well, it doesn't really matter because your community doesn't know that.
Well, right. Like, I'm sure our community, of course, and our
community.
Well, I mean,
now they are because they're going to go on higher ed social and hear it. But
every single Skidmore alumni is going to hear this. But, you know, our Skidmore community doesn't much care that this other school that isn't even close to us was doing the same thing because they probably don't have a personal connection to that school. But for us, you know, that put the effort in. To see that, it's kind of, you feel a little like, oh, like, when am I going to be the only one? Or like, when am I going to be that person or that institution that stands out with what I did? But it's tough. It's a challenge, but I like the challenge. Well, it's fun.
And if we're focused on our students, I think in the end, standing out to the all of, like, there's this idea of let's stand out to the entire higher ed space, and that's fine, and that's great. But our job, first and foremost, is to get the job done for the students and the community we serve. So I think if we're doing that, then we're winning. You know,
Billy's student doesn't care. They care that you sent them something that means something to them. That's all that matters. That's all that matters. That's the whole point of social media, which a lot of people don't get, but, you know.
Yeah, but I think that's the biggest thing is you've got a lot of these people who – We as professionals need to do things to put ourselves above the rest to advance. And okay, this is just true. I mean, let's just live in reality. That's what happens. You know, we want to stand out for that reason. But I think if we do a good job at our institution, people take notice, you know. And you know, if we're out there doing good things, we're probably talking about it at conferences. I think the best thing that, you know, and this is more of that professional side of being in higher education, but take that time to propose for a conference, take that time to get out there, take that time to do a webinar, work with someone. I mean, I was really lucky recently, and this was just so cool for me because I love Sprout Social. Mm-hmm. I got to run a whole Sprout Social webinar, and I got to pick the people who came on.
To that webinar, Chris.
I remember
I was tuned in.
Yeah, it was such a fun time though. I mean,
it did a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, we brought in Nikki Sundstrom to that. We had a community, we had a more community college feel to it. And then we had, I brought in Mike. I did bring in Joel to kind of approach it from a business school, kind of career office perspective. So it was a really diverse group of people. And it was just really fun to do. But those sort of things stand out. I mean, if you want to get noticed in this space, that's what you have to do. And I hate to say this, but sometimes in our institutions, there is no more next step. So sometimes you have to be out there doing good things because it's the only way you're going to get, go up the higher ed ladder, so to speak. And, we have to, it's not looking out for, I don't consider it looking out for myself. Like I consider it looking out for my family because in the end I need to serve them and they are the most important thing in my life. So to do that, I need to, you know, always have the opportunity to do a little bit more, at least till I hit a point where I feel like, okay, I'm good, you know, and I'm not there yet. I'm definitely not there yet. I still got more growing to do professionally. So,
well, I think we all do. And, I also think that we're out of time for this episode of Higher Ed Social. It's been fun talking to you, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Yes, thank you.
For all you listeners, head down to highered.social, get links to the things we talked about today. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. If you like the show, please consider giving us a review. We're still waiting for awesome reviews, and we love hearing what you guys think. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HES Podcast. Send us a tweet. We love getting your feedback that way. And we also like to know if you want to be on the show. So thanks again, Chris.
Thanks, for joining Chris.
Us. Thank you.
And don't forget to go listen to YI Social and YI Social Sessions.
Yes.
They're all under one iTunes, so you don't have
to. That should make it easy.
Yeah.
Bye. Have a great whatever time of day you're listening to this.